Welcome to Conductor's Brew, everybody. Matt, my friend, how are you doing over there in Zoomland? Zooming across the neighborhood.
Hello, from across the neighborhood, indeed. Sir, Larry, it's good to see you. I am hanging in there. You know, we got some good days, we got some not so good days. That's kind of the, I think we're all sort of in that spot where we're sort of, we're trying to figure out how to maneuver life right now.
Yeah.
A lot of transition, let's say. It's a big moment of transition. And welcome to, by the way, I didn't say this last week, welcome to year two of the weirdest 2 years of your life.
Yeah.
It's good to be back here today, this week. We've got a couple of guests. The regular crew is back. One of them has a wonderful announcement about a particular performance of his coming up. Actually, let's say hello to Matt and Brandon right now. Hello, Matt.
Hey, y'all. Good to be back. Happy New Year.
Yeah. Glad to see you again from your undisclosed location somewhere up north again. Are you in the bunker or are you in more permanent surroundings now?
Permanent surroundings.
More permanent surroundings. Okay. So you're out of the temporary mountain shelter and now on the Great Plains of Wisconsin.
Yes, I am.
And how is life up there in Wisconsin?
Home in Milwaukee is really nice. It's a little cold, but you know, as we have discussed earlier, I got my love to keep me warm.
That's right. And congratulations to you, pending nuptials. Pending nuptials for McKeever, everybody. Yes. It's going to be a few years, right? But they're on the calendar.
Yeah, we're on the calendar. We got engaged at the end of December, and looking forward to tying that knot very safely. When the time comes in 2023,
I sense many refreshing brews coming your way as a celebratory brews.
Fair enough.
Well, good to see you. Good to have you back, Matt.
And thanks. Then Brandon, thank you all.
We've got you back here as well, and you've got a big night tonight coming up. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Happy New Year again to our listening audience out there. Tonight I'm very excited. I get to do my master's recital at the University of Utah with the Utah Philharmonia Orchestra, the strings, because that's the world we live in right now, but they sound fantastic. We're doing the Mozart Adagio and Fugue in C minor, and then the Shostakovich Chamber Symphony after his string quartet number 8, which is in C minor as well. So very kind of reflective, somber, emotional music, but I think it's appropriate for the time we live in right now, and it certainly has meant a lot more to me in this last 2 weeks than ever before.
It's an interesting thing, the C minor, how different keys reflect different moods, and it's an interesting thing to balance, because we have to satisfy so many requirements when we go and do programming. It's just so difficult to balance everything, and as you say, without winds and without brass, without having those numbers, that really limits our options in terms of programming our repertoire. What led you to program those two pieces?
That's a great question. Interestingly enough, the Mozart I found probably a year and a half ago, I came across. I'd never heard it before. And I heard it on the radio, I think is what happened. And it just kind of stuck with me. And, you know, I'm a fan of Mozart and I like anything really in C minor. That's one of my favorite keys. It's probably my second favorite key after G minor. It just was, it was fun. It's something a little bit different because it's sort of Mozart flexing his Baroque style muscles a little bit with his own flavor, of course. And it's sort of brilliant. He was actually writing that or he kind of compiled the little piece. It's only about 7 minutes long. At the same time, he was writing his last three symphonies. And of course, the 41st has that great fugue in the finale. And so I think that's sort of where his mind was, looking back on Bach and Handel. And then the Chamber Symphony was actually one, as I was looking for other great kind of string rep that would have some meat to it. It's one that Dr. Baldwin recommended. And so I took a look at it. And of course, Shostakovich, I'm a big fan of his. Knowing his life and everything that he had to deal with and things that happened along the way, I was very curious as what this piece was all about. And so after giving it a listen or two and looking at the music, and I was just like, you know, this is going to be great. And the fact that I could kind of at the time, I actually had three pieces I was going to do. There was a Martineau piece that was supposed to be there that we can't do because of COVID restrictions at the university. But so it was going to be a nice little kind of C minor bookends to this recital. But regardless, I think they work very well together. And I'm very excited to do this because, you know, both speak in a different way to kind of a different side of me. My excitement and my enthusiasm for Mozart and also older music. But then, of course, the Shostakovich with that deeply emotional autobiographical kind of music is certainly something that I've turned to quite a bit in this last year.
Awesome.
It's amazing what we're going to maybe discover about ourselves and what things we're looking for in music going through these tough times. I noticed that I've gravitated a little bit more to the late Romantic composers. I've been listening to a lot of Elgar lately. Elgar seems to be soothing my soul lately in these last few months.
I've had kind of a problem listening to a lot of things. It's like my brain just is so overstimulated or something already that I don't know what to pick. And whatever I choose to listen to, it's almost like it doesn't affect me the way it used to, which is kind of concerning in a way. But I've been getting a lot of requests from the groups that I work with for quote unquote, you know, light music or happy music, which I totally get. You know, that's people are looking to be uplifted and they're looking for something that's on the lighter side that won't make them really, really think too hard about current circumstances, so to speak. But it's really, really difficult for people, especially when they're used to having regular concerts, to not have those to go to. And then, of course, those of us trying to plan the concerts were a bit hamstrung by the restrictions and the guidelines that come from the health department, but also in the fact simply that there will be some that choose not to participate, which is totally fine. That's their right and their prerogative in this time, of course, and any time, but especially now. So it's been interesting trying to navigate those waters. I suppose we should get into, speaking of water, we should get into what we are drinking. Brandon, I know you have a particularly watery beverage there. Before we get into, you know, the real brews,
yeah.
Would you like to tell us what you're drinking on?
Oh, snap. Brent, okay.
Sorry, that was to me. Yeah. Yes. So, my beverage choice today is a lovely flavored water. Water, as I was explaining to the gentleman before we started this podcast, that this is water straight from my refrigerator door.
That makes it classy.
A Kroger packet of dragon fruit flavoring.
Ooh. So
it's a deliciously sweet Kool-Aid water.
What is dragon fruit?
I love a dragon.
I know. I've seen them in the supermarket.
Yeah. Dragon fruit is a Southeast Asian cactus plant. It's the fruit of the cactus. That they produce or they grow and then they market it that way. It's interesting though, because the dragon fruit itself is not very flavorful. So I don't know what they add to it to give it sort of a flavor profile, but
sugar.
It's probably, but yeah, that's, I like the taste and it's kind of fun. So, and then they color it because the outside of it is very colorful. It's a very like red magenta kind of color, fuchsia even.
Yeah, hold it up there.
On the outside. The water. So there's the water. It's this like reddish color.
Wow, you've imbibed quite a bit since
I have.
Saw that.
So yeah, that's my choice today.
I've seen Brandon pound down like 17 glasses of Dr. Pepper at one meal before. The man can drink.
Brandon, can I tell this poker night story about the Dr. Pepper? Do you mind if I?
No, absolutely. Okay. Go for it.
So back in the before times, when it was.
And this podcast was a poker game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the evolution of this podcast, of course, is that Larry and I and the crew, we would just get together and chat about whatever. And that sort of came out of semi-regular poker games that I would host here at my place. And Larry would bring his table and his chips, and we would play. And we've had other regular guests on the show who would also play. For instance, Ashcon would come play.
Emily,
and,
too.
And Emily, yes. Thank you. And John, yeah. And I think we would all enjoy our respective adult beverages, and that's, you know, that's just how we do. And, you know, I'm sorry, Larry, the cruddy sark just is not going to cut it, man. You got to upgrade next time.
But, oh my!
Yeah,
I'm on a budget, man. I'm on a budget.
But Brandon, you were bringing, what, whole liter bottles? At least one. I think you brought two once, didn't you?
I bring the 2 liter bottles. Yeah, 2 liter bottle of Dr. Pepper.
I don't know how you do that. I mean, my bladder just isn't. My physiology is just not. It cannot handle that amount of imbibing of Dr. Pepper. It's just so. Kudos to you, sir. And I do not mean to denigrate your drinking styles.
I know it's not. I'll just say for the record, though, it's not an everyday thing. It's only on special occasions when I will imbibe at that level.
Thank you for qualifying that. I did not mean to take that out of context.
Bracketed indulgence.
Yeah. No, Brendan, you look really good. There's no way you drink 3 bottles of Dr. Pepper every day. So, Matt, what are you drinking over there?
I am drinking a lovely coffee from Stone Creek Coffee here in Milwaukee called Yeti or Not. It's a cocoa and cream coffee.
Are you Yeti?
Oh, I am.
Matt was born Yeti.
I'm all the Yeti.
Yeah, Matt was born Yeti.
Yeah.
So describe it to us. Let me try that again. Describe it to us. What are your tasting notes?
You know, it says it's a cocoa cream coffee, and I don't get either of those in it. It's a little more bitter than I thought it was going to be, and also the caramel doesn't necessarily come through. I don't really get cocoa or cream with it either, but
I call it a bait and switch in my book.
Yeah, absolutely. But still not a bad cup of coffee.
Is this a local roaster?
It is. About
like they just do local stuff. They don't ship across the country or anything.
They can ship across country if you order from the roaster here, but it's not. Okay. They have locations out.
Well,
elsewhere.
You know, if you're feeling so inclined, feel free to ship us a bag or two. You know, something.
Why not? Why not?
Hint, hint, wink, wink. Yeah. Thank you, Larry. What do you got?
Well, okay. Yeah, I have my usual drip coffee, Matt, as to be expected. But I was a little low on the regular coffee that I brew in the morning. So I had about maybe half a basket full of what I would normally do. So it's about half the old regular coffee and half the new thing of decaf. So
that's disgusting.
I'm having two things. What? Oh, come on, man.
I forgot to ask you, Matt.
It all tastes like coffee.
Oh, mine's just drip as well.
Okay. No, I went with the drip today as well. I'm not drinking coffee anymore, but I was drinking actually coffee that Brendan supplied some weeks ago, and I don't know if I actually featured that on the show yet.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I'm glad you're enjoying it. Delicious. Thank you.
I hope it was good coffee. I don't know if it was good, but I'm
no, it's great. And actually, it's actually chocolatey, and it has sort of a nutty, like peanuttiness to it. So it's sort of like drinking a Reese's peanut butter cup, which is quite delightful. But at the moment, I am enjoying a Darjeeling, which is one of my favorite teas. Ah. It's a black Darjeeling. I actually prefer green Darjeeling. It's just it's a unique flavor. This one is called the Imperial Reserve from one of my favorite distributors, Tea Runners. That's TEARUNNERS. We should look into some sponsorships, huh, Larry? But anyway, this is a second flush, which means in tea speak, this is the second picking of the season. So the tea plants, they have a growing season, and the first flush, the first growth, the first leaves that come out are usually the highest quality, the most highly prized leaves, and they also have the most flavor usually. But there's plenty of delightful second or even third flush, third growth pickings that this is one of, straight out of Darjeeling, India. And it's rather high in caffeine, I must say. I just finished the first cup, and I am, as you may be able to tell, I am quite perked up.
You're flying on all cylinders.
I really am. You know, it's been kind of a stressful week in multiple ways, but that's okay. I am happy to take it out on the tea and on all you guys. So thanks for being my punching bag.
Getting out all that energy here on the podcast. All right. Well, that's what we're here for. Go
one
ahead,
last
Matt.
Thing before we move on. I'm sorry, Brandon. I meant to ask you, how do we access your recital after the fact? Because I don't think we'll have this show up until after your recital is complete. So how do we go look if we wanted to do that after the fact?
So I don't know how the School of Music is going to keep it on their YouTube channel, because you can just Google Libby Live, L-I-B-B-Y Live, to get to the broadcasts. But I will have a recording of that afterward that I will post on YouTube as well, so people can actually just connect. If they just Google my name, but they should be able to see it from the School of Music too. They should leave it up for a little bit. So I will have to keep you posted, because I don't know how long the school is going to actually keep that on their site.
Okay.
All right.
So that would be University of Utah, Brandon Horrocks. Do you mind if I spell your name, Brandon?
No, please.
H-O-R-R-O-C-K-S. And that would be Libby Live, would be the streaming service, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so that's kind of I'll take another tortured segue there. What we're talking about today is how we were able to get through a semester with COVID and actually do music stuff. And things like Libby Live and other streaming platforms were, you know, kind of a way that got done, and able to get some actual eyes on the work that everybody's been doing. So today our topic is a look back at the fall semester, maybe kind of the spring too, the whole 2020 experience. And as we bid a very, very fond farewell to 2020. So guys, I throw it open to the floor. What was some of the key lessons that we got from the COVID experience that we might take forward into this next semester while we're still dealing with it?
I'll jump on that. This seems to be a recurring theme, which is prepare for the unpreparable, essentially, which is to say that we thought certain things were going to be happening, and then that kind of changed. And then the news that we were getting seemed to indicate certain things, and we had to adjust based on those things. And the reality on the ground was often shifting quite a bit. So in terms of what we were allowed to do and what we also felt was best to do for not only our orchestra members and chorus members in some cases, but also the community. How do we best serve the community in this time? And that was a challenge to figure that out. And I'm not sure there's one right answer. I'm still figuring that out. So before I launch into my 2020 experience, I just want to open it up to Brandon or Matt to see what your takeaways were as well.
All right. I'll go. And, you know, I think it was, I cannot say like really clearly how hard this has all been. I mean, I don't know if you all go through this where you just kind of feel like a really big part of you is just kind of like no longer functioning. And that's really, really where I am. And,
we're all nodding along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was incredibly proud of how the university was able to handle a lot of the things and come up with a lot of creative solutions for us to be able to rehearse and to be able to perform. And I really do think that a really big one does have to do with the fact that they came up with a creative solution for us to rehearse outside, rehearse and perform outside, you know. I think in some case, it kind of brought the outdoor venue back, which is not that you know, people travel down to Park City and see the Utah Symphony play out there, or you know, the Milwaukee Symphony here plays some concerts outside. But I think bringing a full symphony or a chamber symphony back to just kind of sort of like a pop-up thing, a standalone, you know, doesn't have to be a ticketed event, doesn't have to be a, you know, an event that you stay for and see the whole thing. It just kind of brought back, I want to say, like a little bit of casualness to classical music, you know, come and go as you please. You know, I don't know. It brought back a kind of an old style, even though, you know, classical music in of its sense is an old style, you know, form or entity, but it kind of sort of brought it back in a new way, I really thought that that was nice to see.
I thought, kind of with that outdoor music thing, when the Salt Lake Symphony was doing its initial rehearsals in the fall outside under the pavilion at one of the parks here in the valley, it kind of reminded me of the old town bands where they would get underneath the pavilions. I know that was that's a big thing, especially in New England. You know, we talked about Charles Ives a few weeks ago, and that was a great influence of those kind of town outdoor concerts. And I just, it made me kind of nostalgic for that, like you were saying, for that time. Although I didn't live through that time, of course. But anyway, but it makes me think, well, maybe we can do more with that in the future. I mean, I'm really trying to find the lessons that we're learning now because we're forced to go through them that we can then take forward into, you know, hopefully a future soon that's without COVID, that we can still use those lessons and make what we do more engaging and, you know, more meaningful to people. And I think that's one thing is making those outdoor things accessible. And for the most part, I think, you know, it works pretty well, except for when the sprinklers flooded out the orchestra. One of my favorite stories. Miguel actually talked about that in the convocation yesterday for the School of Music at the,
That's the School of Music's department head.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry. Yes, sorry. That's my boss at the University of Utah School of Music. But yeah, that's going to go down in the history books for the School of Music for sure. And by the way, Brandon, you're on my Christmas card for this. Did you see those Christmas cards go out? And it's a picture of the orchestra leaving the outdoor venue, going back inside. And I'm pretty sure that's you. Have you seen this Christmas card?
I didn't see the card, but I think I know the photo you're talking about. I think it's the same photo they used for the Camerata Awards.
Yeah,
that they did.
You're wearing your blue jacket.
Yeah, that's me in the gray jacket in the back. Yeah.
I get because we got a Christmas card this you know just a few weeks ago, and I was like, that looks like Brandon. So I got a Christmas greeting from you. Thank you, sir. So Brandon, what are your kind of maybe a big takeaway from lesson learned from this whole crazy experience?
Yeah, I think I had two thoughts about that. And I completely agree with Larry, what you were saying and what Matthew was saying about kind of how we've been forced to retool and rethink our presentation and our offering to the community as far as music is concerned. My two thoughts really were, one is it became very obvious very quickly. And this happens whenever there is kind of any sort of crisis that happens, I think, is you see where the leadership is and those who can rise to the occasion and think creatively, even though, you know, we as musicians are part of a creative lot of people. There are certainly people that are far more creative than I am. But it was interesting to see which organizations and which people and which conductors in particular rose to the occasion and really started thinking once we got past the initial shock of coming to a screeching halt, who was still going to be able to function and started to think through how do we do this because we know what the importance of this is for our players, our constituents, our donors, and for the greater community. And so that became really apparent really fast. And I will say, I do have huge props, like Matthew was saying, to the School of Music and to Professor Dr. Robert Baldwin, and for all those who were involved in really thinking about how do we make this still happen so that not only do the students still have a good music experience as an ensemble, but how do we move forward so that we don't all get stuck in this, you know, this melancholy, depressive state we were kind of in for a few months. I know I was. And the other thought I had was I really have enjoyed the fact that we've had to be creative about how do we offer and deliver music to the community, whether that's virtually, whether that's taking it to the parks like we saw happen here in Salt Lake or wherever that may be. I remember going to several of those rehearsals and a couple of the concerts that Salt Lake Symphony did in parks. And I was watching not only the guests that were there, who are the regular supporters for the most part, but also just the people that were randomly in the park enjoying themselves with their families or walking their dogs or whatever the case may be, that would just stop and listen and appreciate it. Because I remember, you know, I think we forget that how important music is in our lives sometimes because we take it for granted, especially those of us that do it all the time. And, you know, when we didn't have it for so long, to finally hear the French horn again sounding outside, or to hear the violins on stage by themselves, or to hear, you know, a bassoon line just kind of cut through and everybody's like, what is that thing? You know, that meant a lot to a lot of people, even people that don't really go to concerts, classical concerts. That's one of the things I saw in the parks a lot, where people, even I think, Matthew, I went to one of your rehearsals, and when you were doing the Dvorak, and watching the people that were playing Ultimate Frisbee, that would just stop and listen to the rehearsal, because here's this random group of wind musicians playing this kind of Star Warsy sort of cantina song. And yet they were just kind of like, what is this? But they enjoyed it. They loved it. People sat down and listened. And I really appreciated the fact that we were able to do that.
You know, I remember exactly what you're talking about. And it was very interesting to get random applause when we would finish movements in rehearsals. It was very surreal and extremely rewarding to kind of, you know, just kind of get that affirmation again of, you know, I don't know if sometimes it seems like what we're doing is very, you know, selfish in our own right, because we're very lucky and we get to be able to follow these little passion projects. And to then just get a little bit of reinforcement in being, oh yeah, project means something to someone else besides me. You know, it was a rewarding experience to even have that. And then also to, with, oh, I think maybe a week after that concert, Dr. Baldwin rehearsed the water music, and the people who were walking around in that park, again, just couldn't get enough. So many people just stopped and watched and took video. And again, I can't claim that these people were not or were classical music supporters or fans, you know, outside of their normal daily lives, but it then just became a part of their life in that moment without having it be expected. And maybe that was kind of the real takeaway from this, is the ability to kind of throw something at someone unexpectedly that just brightened the day for 30 seconds or 30 minutes, depending on how long you wanted to listen.
Yeah, it's good that we have these positive upsides to everything. Matt Minella, you were going to share something you were a second ago or a few minutes ago.
Oh, yes. Well, just a quick recap on how the fall went. I mean, one, as I mentioned, I think in previous shows, one group of mine decided that it was best to cancel entirely, and another elected to go ahead with in-person rehearsals. And we had to navigate certain waters towards the end of the fall, late November, December, in that particular area where that orchestra is based. Their case positivity rate quadrupled from what it was when we decided to start meeting. And so we had to make the painful decision to go virtual with about 3 weeks left before a concert. That was a compromise, and we managed to piece together a wonderful little video. Hired a fantastic production company here in Salt Lake City, and they put together a video compiled of a compilation of, it wasn't so much a compilation as it was an editing project, really. I had the string orchestra, all record themselves in Bach's Jesu Joy of Man's Desiring. And we set up an instructional video about how to record themselves and had them all send us their videos. And we were able to put together this really cute little 3-minute video, 4-minute video, showing really what we had accomplished for the fall, which wasn't as much as we had hoped to do. But we had already been limiting our rehearsal lengths anyway, in the interest of keeping the air fresh in the rehearsal space. And so we're looking forward to some relaxing of restrictions, which may not be possible until later this year, it seems. So in the meantime, there's a lot that's up in the air. I'm planning for a couple of different possibilities. Always kind of in the back of my mind is the possibility that miraculously this thing will go away and we'll be able to get together as normal. While that's probably the least likely, I'm still trying to be prepared on that. On that front. And then what I think is the most likely is kind of what's happened over the past fall, which was we had a smaller group and were able to get together in a minimal capacity and put together shorter pieces on the smaller size, the smaller scale. What I mean by that is missing a lot of the winds and brass. So we'll see. Right now, one of my other groups, we're polling our members to see who can commit to the rehearsals and performances, all things considered. And that's really what I'm using to base repertoire selection on is who do we have, especially considering that if we were to pick something big now and we don't have the personnel for it, that leaves us in a bind because then we're looking at hiring outside people. Which is not really the mission of the organization. They really try to focus on their own community and not pulling in others and paying those others, which can give the appearance of unfairness in some cases. So there's a lot to balance, and it's still up in the air right now. But just kind of taking one day at a time and keeping tabs on the news and the latest reports and kind of moving forward with. My first priority is always moving forward is always just that the safety and health of the people that we're making music with. I obviously without them we can't do this, and I don't want to create an environment that is unhealthy, and I especially don't want people to feel pressured into participating because their friends and neighbors are doing so. So there's a bit of I don't want to say I will call it healthy conflict of differing points of view that we need to hash through to really to get to the core of what is really the best thing for us right now, everybody. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah. I think the point you made about the, you don't want to make people feel pressured to participate because others are doing, that's something that's always in the back of my mind because, and I send out my emails, like, you know, when we were meeting in person, earlier in the fall with the Wasatch Symphony, we still had the same email list that everybody gets, the wind players and everybody who wasn't participating. I was saying, oh, here's rehearsal schedule. And I always felt bad because the people who couldn't participate either because we weren't having winds or if they were strings and they just didn't feel comfortable, they're seeing that the party's still going on, but they're not coming to the party. And I was always cognizant of trying to, I don't know, make sure people knew that they were still part of our orchestra, even if they don't feel comfortable or can't participate right now because of this. So we had going forward, we have to make sure that we're very cognizant of welcoming people back and making them feel like they're a part of this group and that they, whatever group it is, and that they were never not a part of our group. You know, it was just a temporary thing. So I wanted to get a little bit of nuts and bolts stuff about how this, you know, how we were able to kind of pull these things off. And I wanted to ask particularly McKeever and Brandon about what the university did in terms of rehearsals and making sure that things were safe. Like, what were your thoughts about how effective that was from what all we heard that, you know, we didn't have any transmissions that were, you know, slated back to stuff at the School of Music. So it seems like it was successful from a safety standpoint. How was it successful in terms of rehearsal and actually getting work done? What are you guys' thoughts on that?
I think it was incredibly successful. And the reason I think that it was so was because, you know, Dr. Baldwin came up with this plan that was very creative and implemented it, I think, in a very strategic way. And what we did, instead of just rehearsing the ensemble as just one large ensemble, is we might have one large ensemble rehearsal. And by large ensemble, I mean, you know, a 30-member string orchestra. We might have one large ensemble each week. maybe two. But aside from that, the group was then split into three different chamber cohorts. And that rehearsed in different parts of the building. I think having everyone be separate, you know, for that amount of time, you know, created this immense amount of ownership of their own part and leadership in their group that they were performing in, because they could be, you know, just like a section member in a large ensemble, but could technically be like the principal or the assistant principal or front desk or whatever have you, in the smaller group. And so it brought a lot of leadership and kind of sort of ownership of what they were doing and how they were going to apply it into the large, ensemble space. I think it also, just from like a conductor's perspective, it taught us really the importance of trying to get everything done that we needed to in those rehearsals, because the rehearsals were led by the grad students, Brandon, Mike, and myself. And the large ensemble rehearsals were led by Dr. Baldwin. So when he needed to have, you know, the whole group perform or rehearse, he wanted to make sure that the details were taken care of in the small groups. So it was on us to focus those rehearsals and on them to execute it both in the small ensemble setting and the large ensemble setting.
So you guys actually, on a regular basis, would rehearse a cohort of the orchestra. So
once a week, maybe twice a week.
Yeah. So for the perspective of you guys as students, I mean that was probably a really valuable experience of a lot more podium time than you would have otherwise gotten.
Certainly.
Yeah. Yeah, Brandon, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I'll echo what Matthew was saying, that I thought it was handled really well. And I know that Dr. Baldwin spent a lot of painstaking hours of thought and emails and processing to try to figure out kind of multiple avenues to make this happen for the fall, because we were in uncharted territory. Nobody really knew what was going to happen getting the students back on campus. When you're dealing with an ensemble, it you can't do that virtually. It doesn't work. You know, the choir tried it and they did a great job with what they were able to do, but it's just not the same when you can't be together collectively in the group. And so I will applaud all of our musicians for taking that seriously and being responsible for themselves, that we were able to get through a semester without any major hiccup and without having to stop or cancel any concerts. That alone was a huge feat, and I think a lot of that, my adulation goes to the players for that, for being responsible for that. And I think it says a lot about musicians in general. Anyway, you know, we take our craft very seriously, and we tend to be a little bit more aware of what that means to us to be able to perform. And so, you know, we want to be able to do that. And so we're going to be responsible in general. But going back to your question, Larry, about the school, I thought, you know, the policies they put in place, I thought they were great. The fact that they went overboard, yes, but in a positive way of making sure there was enough hand sanitizer throughout the building and wipes for chairs and stands and all those kind of things, you know, the little minor detail things that sometimes get overlooked. I thought they did a great job of handling all that. And of course, the mask policy and those kind of things and implementing ways of making sure students had access to testing. And we were accountable to those cohorts and to our group settings and making sure that everybody was safe. I thought the university handled that very well. And I was very happy. And I am very happy to be part of a university that takes the health and safety of their students so seriously. So I applaud the school for that.
Yeah, I agree. As a faculty member, you know, I'm seeing it from the other side, but I've always felt very well informed. Felt like I've been, my questions have been responded to. One question I wanted to ask you guys also is about kind of what's the feeling in the School of Music, or how was the feeling, in terms of like energy, because I went into camp back on campus for the first time on Thursday since this whole thing happened for a class, because I did my classes all completely virtual in the fall. And this year, conducting classes is a hybrid. We can't, because we're very small classes, only six people. We were able to meet in person some. And so I wanted to give this conducting class the opportunity to actually get to conduct, even if it's just a piano, somebody playing the piano. So we met for the first time in person, and I was just struck by how quiet the building is. And it was just so eerie. And sad, because so much of what I've loved about being in a music building since the time I was an undergraduate at ECU is just the random sounds that are coming from the practice room and from, you know, somebody warming up in the rehearsal room. And it just made me so sad that I couldn't hear that. And I knew why, and I knew that it wasn't because, you know, there wasn't this love of music anymore, but, It felt like it really kind of put me off, like you kind of not like made me mad, but like kind of startled me. And I wonder, like, how is the attitude? I mean, are spirits high? Were they high in the fall? How are they doing now? I mean, what's sort of the temperature of the students?
I'll jump in there really quick. I agree with you. I mean, it was shocking, and it still is shocking to even anywhere on campus, really. It's still kind of a ghost town. And the music building is sort of just this giant shell without a lot of things going on inside. And it's difficult to see. But I will say that the fact that our string players were still able to come and get together for 6 hours a week meant a whole lot to them. And it meant a whole lot to us. And I think that the fact that we were one of the only ensembles that could that maintained regular rehearsal schedule, regular concert schedule, and we were able to do live presentations even though we didn't have an audience, which alone is weird. But just the fact that we were able to still be together in person and have some interaction after not having it for so many months, I thought meant a lot to the students. And the ones that I talked to, they all feel the same way. They really miss their friends and their colleagues and being able to be there with everybody and share that kind of joy and laughter and that social aspect that comes with making music. But the fact that at least we could be doing something was better than having to sit at home over a Zoom meeting or something, just doing lessons with your teacher with a delay in the sound. So I made sure too, and I know Dr. Baldwin talked to us about this before we started last semester, but I wanted to go out of my way as well, that I wanted to make sure that I connected with as many of the students as I saw in person as I could to make sure that they were okay, because I know this is an unusual time for them, and especially our young freshmen with this is their first year of a college experience, and it's such an odd way to begin your college career. And so I wanted to make sure that they still felt connected to something, even though there's such a large disconnect in general.
Yeah. Manella, what did you have a thought? I thought you were trying to jump in there.
Yeah, no, I was just, I wanted to chime in on the precautions that I ended up taking up, in Wyoming. We settled on 40 minute sessions, for rehearsals, and we've got a chorus and an orchestra. The orchestra, was just strings, plus a couple of horns and a flute and percussion. So that was an interesting ensemble. I ended up having to, volunteering to arrange several things, that we used. And I opted to use separate rooms for the chorus and the orchestra. They meet in the same day. And typically, the chorus would use a smaller room and the orchestra would use a stage, but we swapped that. We wanted to get the singing voices in the larger space to be able to spread out a little bit more on stage, since we had about, I think about 20 people or so, maybe 30 people in the chorus. I don't think it was that big actually, but we wanted to ensure adequate airflow. And so we capped the rehearsal length at 40 minutes. We had the orchestra do the same thing, 40 minutes, and then we were done. And we said, you know what? it's kind of painful in a way because you feel like after that 30 or 40 minutes, you're just starting to get warmed up into the rehearsal. But we felt that the need to balance a potential risk of contracting COVID was worth that. And so we're looking at a similar approach this time around. Larry, I wanted to ask you too, what did you end up doing with your groups?
Well, we did strings only. We felt very successful with it. We were able to space everybody out. Wasatch rehearsed in this large gym. We had, I think, 25 or so people in there, but it was ample space for everybody to spread out. And, you know, we limited the length of rehearsal sections and had longer breaks and had good airflow and sanitation, of course, masks for everybody. Taylorsville Symphony, the one that's associated with the college, we have less people in the string section. So we were able to meet in our regular rehearsal venue and still be able to spread out. But you know, we would love to have winds back, and we're looking to maybe do some winds in the spring if we can rehearse outside. So what did you do with your winds, Manella? Did you have them? How'd you handle them?
Yeah, so we had a large enough space and few enough people that we could separate all the strings to have their own stands and keep the winds about 8 to 10 feet away from each other and the strings in the same space with all the doors open. So that was the solution that we elected to take. And really we just had, I think, three or four wind players at any given time. So really it was a minimal, addition to have to think about. It wasn't like we were dealing with a full brass and wind section. Right. We just didn't have those this time around. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just, for everybody out there listening, I just want to direct your attention. We've mentioned this before, but the University of Colorado, University of Maryland study on aerosols, released in November, or maybe it was December, a third round of stuff, of data. And they're really, you really can make the winds decently safe with some mitigation. Oddly enough, I didn't think this. The flute is actually one of the safer ones, apparently, because this is sounds kind of gross, but there's not something wet vibrating like a reed or your lips that creates the aerosols, apparently. It's just the airstream being split and then something about the air rounding the corner. So I'm for a future show, maybe we can get really super nerdy with some of this stuff. But I was surprised at the results that according to this, the flute was, even without mitigation things like masks, was not that, was not as dangerous as apparently the oboe is the most dangerous. So anyway, but I know Brandon, you got to get ready to go. So I want to just kind of wrap things up. What's something you're looking forward to in the fall? And we'll start with you, Brandon, since you got to go prepare for your concert. So, you know, we're hoping that by the fall, this is going to be wrapped up. Well, let's just operate on that assumption. So what are you looking forward to in the fall?
Well, I think if we're able to move forward in a larger way, one of the things I'm looking forward to certainly is to bring back players that we haven't seen for a while that I really do miss. We've got some wonderful brass and woodwind players in my community ensemble and at the university that I've really missed seeing, and I know they've missed being part of the larger ensemble. So I'm really looking forward to that so that we can expand our repertoire offerings. But more importantly, I'm also looking forward to being able to invite back audience in some capacity. I really miss being able to, even though, and I told this to the ensemble yesterday at the university when we were in our dress rehearsal for tonight, I told them, you know, when we stopped between the two pieces we were doing, I kind of miss the fact that I don't hear all the coughing and the rattling and the adjusting and the opening of the loud candy wrappers and stuff like that. And I never thought I would miss that sound, but here we are. I miss that sound. So I'm looking forward to hopefully having some audience back this fall.
Amen to that one. Well, Brandon, I know you got to run. So are you going to take off?
Yeah, I got to take off. Thanks, you guys.
All right.
Thanks for having me back on the podcast. And I'll look forward to the next time down the road. Take care.
Good luck tonight,
Brandon.
Man.
Break a leg tonight.
Thanks, Brandon.
All right, McKeever, what are you looking forward to?
You know, I'd piggyback on exactly what Brandon said, you know, bringing back instruments and musicians that we haven't seen in a while, bringing back the audience. I will be back. I will be happy to be back in Salt Lake City to be resuming the doctorate. And I think, you know, just kind of sort of bringing back some normalcy, I think, you know, having, I think kind of sort of a plan and having things to actually do. And, you know, I think one of the things that is really hard about this, especially for us artists or those who may or may not, you know, have day jobs outside of music or whatever, it's, you know, it's hard to not kind of feel like you're stuck in a revolving door, but the revolving door like has nothing in it, you know, like,
yeah, everything's, it all feels a lot harder right now.
Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, you guys are seeing me right now. I'm sitting in my bathrobe right now, you know?
I just thought that was a luxury jacket you were wearing there.
Yeah, I thought you
something. Oh, well, you know, maybe a little bit, I guess. But, you know, like, it's like days don't really mean anything. The day of the week is kind of sort of not a thing anymore. You know, time of day is also not really a thing
anymore. Yeah, building a regular routine around no schedule without having clear ideas about long-term goals is really challenging for me too.
It really is. That's hard.
It's what I miss the most. I mean, I prefer to have concerts set 8, 9, 10 months in advance, if not more, so that I can learn the music and then put it away for a while and then come back to it, you know, a month or so before I have to start rehearsing it. That's how I operate best. When I have to, I mean, I can learn music very, very quickly and I don't mind doing that necessarily, but it's not the ideal situation, I think, for anybody. And unfortunately right now it's, we're just sort of having to play it by ear, to use, perhaps an overused turn of phrase.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I will say today I had a conversation with someone. They're opening up a brand new amphitheater, in a suburb of Milwaukee. That's, you know, maybe like 15 miles north. And they just asked if they can get my orchestra on the books. And I said, absolutely. You know, like I'm so ready to do something, especially if we have the convenience of being outside. That especially makes a lot more sense right now. And just couldn't have been, you know, more thrilled with the possibility that in 6 months from now, I might have a gig. Like that's really nice.
Yeah, that's definitely something to look forward to.
Just out of curiosity, how did that come about? Is this like a, do you have like a mutual colleague or how did that contact come about?
I do. I have a friend who is the band and orchestra director at the middle school and high school up in that town. And he was contacted by this person, or maybe I think saw the amphitheater, contacted the person, and they were looking for slots to fill for the entire summer. And, you know, he's actually acted as assistant conductor for my orchestra before, and he's taken a couple pieces, either to rehearse or to perform if I'm either not there or on programs alongside me. And so kind of sort of like having this new contact to now navigate a different perspective of how we can, you know, resume operations is a real treat.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, like I said, that's definitely something fun to look forward to. Manella, what are you looking forward to in the fall?
Yeah. So, I have been putting off a Messiah concert for, gosh, I had planned to do one, I think, this spring, and that's now that's off the table. I had also planned to do one back in Christmas, and that's off the table. So yeah, so I'm waiting to do a Messiah concert. Basically, my groups in the two towns I travel to, they have a tradition of doing like a Messiah sing along thing, as many groups do, and they just haven't been able to do it. So looking forward to that. I love Messiah. I can't wait to. I've never done it, so I can't wait to get my hands in on that. I've done the Hallelujah Chorus, but not any of the other parts of it. And also, we're looking forward to a large celebratory concert, sort of a welcome back concert, probably in the fall at my other group. So, and that's assuming, of course, that all goes well with vaccine rollout and that case positivity rates are below a certain level and all that. And those details, some groups, some institutions have done a really good job clearly defining under what conditions they will reopen fully. And I think that's really important to have a good idea of what collectively, what are the conditions under which we will resume normal operations? When can we go back to normal? Everybody's sort of asking that question right now, I think. And we perhaps have been lacking in some significant leadership in that respect. So we're all sort of figuring it out on our own. You know, how do we navigate this? So I'm looking forward to kind of not change the topic, but to introduce a new element. I'm looking forward to some more influential guidance at the federal level in terms of how to go about being consistent in how we approach reopening.
Yeah, I think so too. Some good planning. And what this has showed us, in my opinion, is that with some good planning and some good science, you can still do things, you know, but you have to have coordination. You have to have consistency in planning. All right.
Yes,
well,
yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
One more thing to add. I want to emphasize that music directors, conductors, we don't want to stop, you know, we don't want to stop making music. I think often the sentiment is that, we're just going to give up in a way. But it's not black and white. You know, there's got to be a compromise that we can reach where we can maximize safety and still include as many people as possible in the joy of making music.
Absolutely. Well, what I'm looking forward to, there's many things I'm looking forward to, and I would associate myself with the comments that you guys have made about looking forward to bringing audiences back and having all of our friends, everybody in the orchestra, the wind players back. But one thing specifically I'm looking forward to is being back in the classroom teaching my lecture classes. I knew I liked it, but I didn't really appreciate how much I really did love just standing in front of a lecture hall filled with students, you know, talking about the thing I love, music, and, you know, seeing some recognition. I mean, seeing a lot of bored looks, I'm not going to lie. I don't keep them all in rapt attention, that's for sure. But you do see that recognition come across somebody's face, and you see a question forming in their mind. And to see that is just, I mean, there's nothing like it. And, you know, I'm teaching these classes, and I'm doing them synchronous over Zoom, but I don't see them, you know. Most of them have their cameras turned off, which is fine. But I like to just see those faces and see the learning happening and being able to have that conversation in person. So I'm looking forward to being back in the lecture hall. Well, gentlemen, we haven't heard from this guy in a long time, but he called and said he said he had a lot of choice words for me, but here it goes. The maestro is back. Okay, Manella, it's for you. Go for it.
Oh, man. You know, I heard that really distressing Italian accent. And, you know, not like I have anything against Italians.
I was going to say, you do a distressing Italian accent. Heritage
myself. So, no, I have a sense that this is an urgently needed rant. All right. You know, when you're on the road in your car, and if you're like me, you just got, you know, the radio on, you're listening to some classical music, and you come to the top of the hour and you're like, oh, great, this piece is coming to an end. I don't know what it is. They're going to tell us what it is. And we get to the top of the hour and they launch right into the news without telling you what the piece of music is. That drives me bonkers. Have you ever had, and you know what? I'm not going to pull my phone out and shazam it while I'm driving because I'm trying to be careful, you know, I'm trying to set a good example. So, has that happened to you all?
No, it has. I can attest. Go ahead, McKeever.
It has. It has for me. And I'll tell you what I ended up doing is I literally had to call the radio station and ask them what it was. And it was a piece of music I had never heard an entire life before. And I'm sure maybe no one else on this pod has heard of it. It was a piece by the composer Sigmund von Hausiger called The Nature Symphony.
Ooh.
You know, it's got that, you know, large orchestra and choir.
Oh, wow.
which is very interesting. You know, I think I immediately you know, had to purchase a CD. That's how, that was the age of this. I had to purchase a CD.
Oh, I see.
And then listened to it and was like, yeah, this is a cool piece. It wasn't as cool now as I thought it was when I heard it, though.
Wow. Well, this, sometimes it's the first time hearing something that it's really exciting, and I just want to know what it is. Maybe the radio announcer said what it was before. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Often there's just that little transition music where they play 2 or 3 minute snippet of something, and I'll have to go home, and if I remember, I'll try to look it up on their webpage or something. I didn't think about calling. That's a good idea, but please, for all you radio announcers out there, please just tell us what the music is, for crying out loud.
That's a PSA for the day. It sounds like a plot of a Seinfeld episode. I'm just, you know, it's like calling up the radio station.
And I was listening to something on the radio, and I didn't know what it was. They didn't tell me. How am I supposed to know what it is?
That's the worst Jerry Seinfeld impression I've ever heard in my life.
Actually, when he launched right into that, I thought it was Larry David.
Or was it Larry David or Seinfeld? Or was that Kramer? I mean, what was that, Matt?
I was trying to go for George, so there we are.
No, it's
so
actually
you failed on all accounts.
No, it's the fact that I knew you were going for a Seinfeld character, I guess, was good enough. No,
you're right. I was trying to do a Seinfeld, but clearly my talents lie elsewhere.
No, it's all right. No, I could tell you were trying for Seinfeld. I knew it wasn't Elaine or Kramer. So yeah, you got some chops there, Manella. That's all right. All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show. And to Brandon, who is now probably on his way to the School of Music, or wherever he's going to do his thing. Programming note, next week we are going to have Kim Cherie Lloyd from the University of Louisville, who is the president of the College Orchestra Directors Association, on the show to talk about the upcoming CODA conference, which, of course, will be virtual this year. So tune in next week for that. Should be a fun show. And McKeever, you stay warm up there in the North Country. And again, congratulations to you and your special lady friend on your nuptials.
Thank you very much. It's good to see you all.
Absolutely. We'll have you back on the show very soon. And if you like the show, please make sure you subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And so thanks again, guys, and we will see you next week.
Cheers.